This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast covering Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Richard Woodward and you're tuned into the pre-match show in partnership with our good friends at the Greyhound Pub in Ipswich. This is the Sheffield Wednesday away edition and joining me to discuss that and much more is my good buddy Seb Brown. Seb, how are you? Are you feeling less stressed in the passenger seat this week?
Yeah, it's the right way around on the screen. Everything seems to be back to normal. Balance has been restored. No, it was all right. I enjoyed it. And thank you to those who were very kind on Twitter and gave me some praise. I'm sure in a couple of weeks' time I'll do it again. But it just feels right this way. It's like Ant and Dec. It should always be on this side, or Bert and Ernie, or Joey and Chandler. You know, things should always have balance, I feel.
Yep. Matthew and Marshall. Yeah. So, we're here to talk about Sheffield Wednesday. If you're watching on YouTube, hello to YouTube. Seb and I both have shirts of meaning
every time.
There you go. It's because the cameras are reversed or something. So, if you a little mini competition, just a bit of fun, which shirts are these and why is there relevance to Sheffield Wednesday? I mean, I looked at yours, Seb, and I can remember it, but I can't really remember a meaningful moment, but I'm sure you will divulge all when we get on to Sheffield Wednesday shortly. Let's start with some news. And some frustration for ITFC women, obviously going great guns at the top of the Southern Premier Division. But a 0-0 draw last night or Wednesday night against Gillingham, who were very much set up to get their point. They celebrated, Seb, like they'd won the league at full time. I had to linger around afterwards, and in their dressing room they were playing Sweet Caroline on full blast and chanting along with it. So they were very much happy with their night's work, and as they might, because I think they were there just below the challenges in the division, but didn't really have any attacking intent, maybe one chance before half time, and unfortunately for ITFC, just couldn't break them down. Had the chances, had a few penalty shouts, a few near misses, but unfortunately, more frustration. Another team that, as I said, set up to frustrate them and stop them. But a nice distraction. Newcastle next up in the FA Cup fourth round on Sunday. Newcastle top of their division, a tier below. So should be a really interesting game. And if Ipswich get through, I think Kieran was saying that it matches the longest progression into the tournament. I don't know what the phrase is, but yeah, fifth round will be great. Hopefully beat Newcastle, get them back, get a team at Felixstowe in the fifth round, maybe revenge on Man City, who knows. But we wish them well for that one and a long odd trip up to Newcastle for them. Into other matters, and we'll get some thoughts from Seb now. on transfer dealings largely. Your thoughts, because I've got history here and don't want to upset anyone. Thomas Holy completed his loan move, expected to be to Bradford, but he's ended up with Port Vale in League Two. Your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, Bradford were linked, weren't they? But they went out and signed a keeper from Portsmouth, I think. So that one fell through. And I'm pleased for him that he's got a move. He's clearly not going to play here. You know, he had a couple of half-decent seasons. The first season, he was sort of dovetailing with Norris, wasn't he? They would drop out for a few games and then come back in. And we do forget, I know you hate him, but we do forget he was part of that amazing clean sheet run. Do you remember? In the first season down. So he's played his part here. By all accounts, he's an absolutely top guy. You know, great to have around, great to have on the training pitch, in the dressing room and stuff. So we wish him well. I think it's quite clear, isn't it, that his contract won't be renewed. So this is a chance for him to go out and play some football for the next 4 or 5 months. And I think he's, you know, he's a perfectly adequate League One goalkeeper. I know he's dropped down to League Two just to get some minutes, but there's no reason why a lower sort of half League One side couldn't make him their number one. And we wish him well.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
apart from you, obviously.
And McKenna had added, I'll gloss over that point. McKenna had said that he wants to be a number one, can't really complain about that as a goalkeeper. You know, as we said to Christian Walton, as we discussed with Christian Walton, or in Christian Walton interview available in the usual places, it's all about playing, particularly as a goalkeeper, and you just end up development kind of tailing off, doesn't it, if you're not playing. So, good luck to him in League Two with Port Vale. Also, further interest in other players. What's that smirk about?
Nothing, just the way you were just like League Two, Port Vale, almost dismissive. Well, good luck, Thomas. Some of us like you.
Kieran McKenna has alluded to interest in a few of his players. No surprises, given we announced that those players were up for loans, Idris Ilmazuni and Rakeem Harper, but knows nothing of the reported Swansea interest in Scott Fraser, which is excellent news for me. But typically football managers, maybe, I know he's not been a football manager for long, but maybe Kieran McKenna has learned the dark arts of telling one thing to the press and other things happening behind the scenes. I hope Scott Fraser stays. And possibly one player coming in before the deadline day, deadline on Monday. Have your thoughts on those bits and pieces of news, Seb?
Makes sense, doesn't it? I guess the Evans injury might, and Morsey's now 4-game suspension, might mean that maybe one of Ilmazuni or Harper stays around, because I know you've obviously got Backinson or Bakinson, whichever way we're going to go with that one, and Carroll, but they haven't played a lot of football. So, you know, asking them to perform week in, week out for 90 minutes is a bit of a tough ask. So one may stay. It makes sense for one to go out, obviously, and, you know, have a good 4 months to rebuild confidence and fitness. And it's good that we've got options on the table. I guess we just hope that they go out and play, you know, every single week. We don't want a situation where they're getting the odd few minutes off the bench, etc. We want them to go out and really, really play to a semi-decent level and come back all fit and firing for pre-season. With regards to Scott Fraser, I agree. I'd like to see him stay because, you know, his numbers are superb. He's proven at this level. I guess the argument is in the 3-4-3, where does he really fit in? Could he be one of the central midfield options alongside more of a destroyer? He's certainly got the quality, and I really hope he does stick around. And I guess we'll have to wait and see. When we know Swansea are interested, but they're not going great guns in the league, so they might not want to be backing the manager this time of the year. So hopefully he'll stick about and be able to contribute for the remainder of the season.
Do you have anything to add on Wimbledon victory and Morsey suspension?
Just like you and Dave said, the Morsey frustration is incredibly frustrating. Do we know if the extra game is because he had a red card previously, or is it because it was a futile appeal?
Neither.
We didn't even appeal it, I don't think, did we? We seem to accept it.
I don't think it was anything related to what we did. I think it was just set of 4 games, which...
Because 3 games is the norm, isn't it, for violent conduct? If you punch him in the ref sees it, it's a straight red, and that's 3 games. So the fourth game, the extra game seems ridiculous, but well done, Andy Holt. Well done.
Well done.
You know, all those people that retweeted it and stuff. So, no, big miss, because he was, you know, looking really good. He'd adopted that new role, hadn't he, where he's looking to drive the team on. He was more of a deep-lying player under Cook, and under McKenna, he's really looking to push forward and inspire and drive, and he was really good against Accrington. So that's a big miss with the quality of Sheffield Wednesday's midfield that we'll come on to. He'll be a big miss. The Wimbledon game, just like you and Dave said, you know, a good night's work. Struggled in the first half, obviously. Burns came up with the goods, and you know, we got minutes in players that needed a bit of game time, I guess. And, you know, a great result away from home. And to quote, you know, every footballer for the last 5 years, we look to go in again on the weekend.
Here we do. Worth mentioning, you can listen again to our midweek post-match reaction show. I think in my intro, I might have said pre-match. I'm just so out of practice for any other show on our channel that I just say pre-match because that's all I think about at the moment. So it is post-match. If you listen to the first few seconds and think we did a pre-match midweek for Wimbledon, we did not do that. So stick around. That's probably one of very few mistakes that I make. But who knows, I might have said something stupid or offensive. I've just completely forgotten about it. If you put it on the teleprompter, Ron Burgundy
will say it.
Read it. Cool. Let's talk about Sheffield Wednesday. And do you want a reveal for the people playing on YouTube what the shirt meaning is? I mean, it's going to be
it's
related to Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, it's linked to it. It's nowhere near as impressive as yours. But in the 2005-2006 season, also we struggled as a side. It was the year after Darren Bent had left, Shifky Coochie, Tommy Miller. You know, we lost those 55-60 goals from those three players. So we were struggling. But we actually did the double over Sheffield Wednesday that year. The shirt behind me, we won 2-0 at Port 2-1, sorry, at Portman Road. Naylor and Westlake scored quite early on. I think it was like the third home game of the season, maybe fourth game of the season in total. And away from home, not in this shirt, in the orange shirt, we won 1-0 with a very late goal by Nicky Forster. So a double over Sheffield Wednesday, which hopefully will bode well for tomorrow.
Which orange shirt with it? So for folk listening, it's the PowerGen fan design shirt with the swoosh.
The swoosh, yeah. Wasn't it? We wore the orange shirt in the year before we narrowly fell short. And I think it was the second year of that, wasn't it? Because back then we used to change kits every 2 years, didn't we? So the orange shirt was the orange away shirt for the 04-05 season that stayed with us for the 05-06 season. And obviously this shirt was the new shirt that year.
It was the PowerGen one with the kind of V-neck thingy and the black sleeves. And the you could see the faint logos on the design of the shirt. Yeah,
I'll tell you what, I can't remember that. But yeah, an orange away shirt is always nice, isn't it? So yeah, a shirt from a double over Sheffield Wednesday.
And I've got a black Eon away shirt from Alan Quinn's Thunderbee. We're going to say that against Sheffield Wednesday, against his old club. I think that was a couple of years later, wasn't it?
That was the February of the 2007-08 season. So February 2008, I think, because that was the year we were absolutely amazing at home. Like, we won everything in sight, and away from home, we didn't win until that game. It was a really weird season.
Yep. So there you go. So if you guessed those right, congratulations. You win pride and
respect.
A warm, fuzzy feeling of knowledge. Knowledge is power. Talking about Sheffield Wednesday in 2022, Sebastian, tell us about where they're at the moment. I haven't called you by your full name.
Thank you, Richard. Ninth in the league, so on 40 points, so one place below us, but they do have two games in hand. We've gone above them with the midweek win over Wimbledon, and it's got that kind of feeling of, you know, these are the kind of sides that we're going to have to beat if we are to continue this momentum up the pitch and this late run up the league table and this momentum towards the playoffs. They've played 26 games, like I say, a couple of games less than we have. Won 10, drawn 10 and lost 6, scored 36 goals and conceded 32. Not in the best vein of form at the moment. They've lost 3 of their last 5 games, and they are damaging losses against Sunderland and Oxford, the sides directly above them, who they would have been looking to claw back down. They got battered by Sunderland 5-0, and they lost 3-2 to Oxford last time out with a very late winner. So they are struggling to make headway against, similar to us, they're struggling to beat the sides that they really need to beat to get themselves back into contention. And obviously we all remember that game at Portman Road.
Yeah, we've got the flagship discussion of the key moment. Let's go back.
I saw the keeper had the ball, and then I looked up, then all of a sudden sort of Bon and the keeper were sort of going at it with the ball. And I hadn't really worked out what happened, but Bon hides behind the keeper, sort of bobs around. And when the keeper drops the ball, he just nips in front of him, grabs it, sort of ends up taking it down towards the touchline, but does brilliantly in the fact that he keeps his composure, rolls the ball back to Fraser, who again could quite easily just lash that ball at the goal. But no, he picks a pass well and rolls to Chaplin, and Chaplin can't miss really.
There you go. Joe Fares describing the action. I've got much more crap on the wall behind me, haven't I? That was interesting to see that. Been making some progress there. And as Joe was saying, it's great instinct by Bond, but were you at that game, Seb?
No, I wasn't at that one.
It was a real kind of out of jail situation, though, for that one. It was a bit of a frustrating day. Very typical of that kind of time under Paul Cook.
Yeah, I mean, they took the lead, didn't they, in the 25th, 26th minute, quite relatively early on in the game. And we kind of huffed and puffed, but felt like it wasn't going anywhere. But thankfully, they had that absolute mare at the end that we were able to capitalise on.
Indeed. I mean, the home form, which is obviously they're going to need to be the focus. is pretty good, though. In terms of points accumulated at home, it's not great because I think they played only 11 games and most teams have by now played 13 or 14. But on average, 2 points per game at home. It's only 1.2 points per game away. And XG is decent at home, 1.76 for those who like it. Only 1.14 XG against, which is the fifth best in the league. Our goals against is 1.1, by the way, which is, I think, pretty good. So, just some XG in there, just for some mix. I also found these weird stats about home advantage. On footy stats, I forget what domain it is, but there's a 25% increased likelihood of them scoring goals at home rather than away, and a 26% increased likelihood of conceding less goals in their home matches as well. So home form, great. And I know only one defeat, so which you mentioned as well.
Yeah, only lost once. Yeah, it was start of October, so they haven't lost at home for three months now. So whilst they are lurking outside the playoffs and they haven't really been able to put any kind of consistent runs together this season, it's not going to be an easy game, like you've just said.
And Darren Moore's in charge still, and we know what to kind of expect from him, don't we?
Yeah, obviously Darren Moore been there. He took over, didn't he, in the March of their relegation season. They had that crazy game with Derby on the last day. Did it finish 3-3, if I remember rightly? And Wednesday had to win and they went down and Derby stayed up. So he stayed with them throughout the summer. So he's been there for coming up to a year now. Played 46 games. So he's played a full season's worth of football with them. Won 16, drawn 15, lost 15, 1.37 points per game. And I guess that kind of form just shows it's that inconsistency, isn't it? Like we said, they've not been able to get going in this league. And that's what's caused them to be ninth outside the playoffs.
And there is some kind of fundamental bits that we can call to kind of explain that. I mean, goals scored is not great. I mean, there are a lot of stats on in an attacking sense which are mid-table, and those game stats that you just cited for Moore, they are mid-table kind of stats, aren't they? They are just bang average. It's weird how their form is so skewed towards home advantage. But overall, only 36 goals scored, which is the 12th best in the division. Only if, I'm looking at these, 13 shots on average per game is 10th best in the division. 1.6 big chances, I think, is great. And in terms of the style, and we'll talk about more about this type of, the possession and the passing and all that kind of stuff. Lots of goals from open play, but not many elsewhere. 75% of their goals at home are from open play. And then the rest of them are mostly set pieces, no penalties in there. So they're not creating chances for them through balls. They're not creating, we'll talk about the possession. Talk about the possession for a sec, because that tells a story with the Darren Moore team.
I will do, yeah. Just that point you've made about the no goals from through balls, that surprises me. Doesn't it surprise you with a player of the quality of Barry Bannon in central midfield looking to, dictate and get on the ball? That stat did surprise me. From a possession point of view, 51.8% is the average, which is 11th in the league. So it's one of those mid-table kind of stats. 72.4% accuracy, which is 10th in the league. So, they're very average for the amount they keep the ball, and they're very, very average with their accuracy. They're a short passing side. 77% of their passes tend to be, short passes. They are 19th for total accurate long balls and 20th for inaccurate long balls, but they do like to get their crosses in. They are the third most crosses in the league, so this is an area where people are going to be looking to capitalize from.
Yeah, so those are cross passes, by the way. Those are side to side passes rather than crosses, but you are right. A lot of the threat and the assists come from crosses, and as you said, 19th and 20th for total long balls, basically. So we know what we're going to get. We're going to get the sideways passing. We knew it from Doncaster. Those of you who recall the 1-1 draw in the first season down, they should have passed us off the park and should have beaten us, but we managed to fluke a goal in that one. And it was similar against Sheffield Wednesday earlier in the season as well. So we know what we're going to get in terms of style of play. I do think we'll talk about Barry Bannon shortly. But defending, also not great. I mean, the home defensive record is much better. Only 10 goals conceded at home. They don't concede too many shots, but only 13.3 tackles on average per game was the 19th best in the division. The lowest number of attempted tackles. Generally, they're winning the ball back through interceptions. They're flood midfield. That's not too many surprising. Too much surprising. Not great in the air. Only 20-odd aerials won per game, which is the 18th best in the division. So it is a team that wants to play on the floor. Eight clean sheets. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the personnel. I think there are aspects at play with the personnel on the defensive side and the attacking side, which we'll come on to in a second. But as you know, keep saying, Seb, short passing, lots of crosses, isn't it? And, yeah.
And all these, all these stats that, you know, we're saying, like, 10th in the league on average, 12th in the league on average, explains exactly why they're 9th. It seems quite similar to us, you know, a couple of years ago under Lambert, and I guess last year, half under Lambert, half under Cook. They're a side which, you know, can't get any kind of consistent runs together. And when they come up against the big boys, they beat Plymouth recently, but the vast majority of times they face one of the league big boys, so to speak, they tend to choke a little bit, and that's why they are where they are.
And they've got a real problem with, certainly earlier in the season, but the defeat to Oxford shows they're not great at holding on to leads as well. Again, more likely to be an away situation than a home one. But there are situations where they've taken the lead twice. I think they took the lead twice in Oxford and they then lost 3-2.
Yeah, yeah, they did. They
draw with Cambridge and Wimbledon, similar situations.
Yeah, and the midweek game against Oxford, they're 1-0 up. Barry Bannon puts them 1-0 up 7th minutes. They equalise first half stoppage time. Wednesday then go 2-1 up in the 61st minute, and they concede almost immediately the 62nd minute. Oxford get an equaliser, so they are very vulnerable when they, you know, when they always say in football, don't they, you're the most vulnerable when you've scored, and they kind of prove that fact. They get it back to 2-2, and they get an 84th minute winner through Matty Taylor. So they're not a side that's good if they go, you know, go in front. They haven't got that kind of, I guess, is it a mental thing, we don't know, mental, physical thing, but for whatever reason they're not great at going ahead in games.
And talk to us about formations.
So they like a three at the back system. That's what they've played for the vast majority of the campaign so far. Normally it's a 3-1-4-2. They allow like a deeper lying central midfield player, which recently has been Luongo, to allow Bannon to sort of roam and get on the ball and look to pop up in space and make things happen. He's very much their key player and their danger man. The three at the back, they like to play wide. Liam Palmer, who plays on the right hand side, we'll come on to the expected 11 in a minute, but Liam Palmer on the right hand side has got a couple of assists so far this season. So they like their centre-backs to be wide. But Darren Moore does like to change things up a little bit. Like I say, we'll try and predict the side in a minute, but he has sprung a few surprises in games so far this season. He likes to rotate, keep people fresh. But the three at the back is a fairly consistent thing.
Yeah, and there are transfers we need to talk about as well. Tis the season for transfers. And you mentioned Barry Bannon. And to your point before about the lack of through ball goals, Barry Bannon's, I looked him up on SofaScore, they've got heat maps, and basically the entire pitch has kind of got an amber or a red for him, because basically he goes wherever he wants. Luongo, as you said, will sit and allow him the scope to basically do what he wants. And I do think that means there'll be points where either everything is on Bannon or he's not going to be there, he'll be out of position. And I think that's possibly a factor here as well. The other factor as well is the strikers, which there's a big debate about who will start. I think certainly one's a shoo-in, who accompanies him we'll talk about as well. But certainly talking of shoo-ins, the goalkeeper, there's going to be no doubt about that. But obviously a goalkeeper known to us.
Yeah, Bailey Peacock Farrell, obviously on loan from Burnley, the one that had the howler against Bond. I'm still amazed they didn't shout at him, because I'm sure Iorfa is staring right at him. So, you know, it's crazy he's not screaming at him. But yeah, Peacock Farrell will be the keeper. They've got a guy, Joe Wildsmith, the backup, but Peacock Farrell's played 23 games so far this season, so he's a shoo-in for the number one position. The centre-backs, this is where it gets a bit interesting. So they've signed two centre-backs in the window so far, one today. So they've brought in Jordan Story and they've brought in Harley Dean on loan from Birmingham today. They're both experienced centre-backs and they've got some bad injuries. Dominic Iorfa, obviously formerly of this parish, he was a right-back, I think, on loan at us for the majority of the time, but he's shifted inside. He's been out since November, and Shay Dunkley was part of that Wigan side, wasn't he? They got picked apart when they went into administration. He went off in the Sunderland game, I think it was, a couple of weeks ago, and he's not been back since. So for the last few games, they've had a back three of Liam Palmer on the right-hand side, Sam Hutchison's come into the centre of the back three, and Marvin Johnson's been on the left-hand side. But I would fully expect, you know, you don't go and sign players of the likes of Harley Dean and Jordan Story and, you know, have them on the bench or have them not involved. Dean only joined, I think it was last night, so whether or not he's going to be ready to step straight in, I'm
when
not sure.
When were we recording? Sorry,
yes, joined on Wednesday night. Make the same mistake I made last week. He joined on Wednesday night. Jordan Story arrived on the 19th, so I expect Jordan Story to come in, and it'll be four of the previously mentioned three in the back three tomorrow. On Saturday.
I mean, maybe it's an attacking thing, but the centre-backs really, really do play wide. But it's not a surprise because Palmer and Johnson, both their natural positions are either wing-back or midfield. So they are crying out for, I was speaking to a Sheffield Wednesday fan, crying out for orthodox centre-backs to come and help out. And Harley Dean's obviously a name that should be known to a lot of people from the Championship, Brentford and Birmingham. I think he's made 15-odd appearances for Birmingham this season. So it's not like he's going to be out of fitness or anything like that. So he should, as you said, Story and Dean, I'd be surprised if they don't start, with Hutchinson probably staying as the anchor in the middle there. And then, talk us through the options in kind of central midfield and out wide.
So the Jack Hunt will be the sort of the right wing back, but their wing backs really do play pushed up. It's almost like a 3-5-2 with a five across the midfield. They really like to get forward. So Jack Hunt will be the right wing back. 21 appearances with 3 assists. Obviously very experienced at Championship level with Bristol City and Palace, I want to say. Bristol City, definitely. And then likely to be Mendes Lang, who used to be at Cardiff on the left-hand side. They're struggling a bit in that left-hand position. He's only made 5 appearances so far with 1 goal and 1 assist, but he did start midweek against Oxford. So I think he's likely to be the player in the left-back position. Or if the two new guys come into the back three, they might look to push Marvin Johnson up that left wing-back role.
And talk to us about the centre midfield three, because we've talked about Luongo and his job. Well, I think that's no surprise, given we know what his we talked about him earlier in the season. It's a shame that his loan was cut short, but he's only really come into the side in recent times, hasn't he?
Recently, yeah. This is an area where they've got issues with injuries and stuff. So Luongo will be the deep sitting one. We had him in loan in 2012, but he wasn't built for a Mick McCarthy relegation scrapping team, wasn't he? So he went back to, was it Spurs? I think he was on loan from.
Jewell? I don't know.
Yeah, Jewell signed him, but Mick sent him back, didn't he?
Oh, did he? Okay, fine.
Yeah, Mick sent him back. He signed in that window. Mick sent him back and brought in, more experience.
That's good for a change, isn't it?
Brilliant.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Barry Bannon, obviously, is the one that will look to get on the ball. Very much, like you said, he pops up everywhere, a bit like Alan Judge a couple of years ago. He doesn't really have a position. He'll get everywhere on the pitch, and hopefully that'll be able to leave some space to exploit. 25 appearances so far this season, 3 goals and 4 assists. And then the other central midfield, who I'm delighted you're going to try and make me pronounce, is Fasayo Dele-Bashiru. 17 appearances so far this season, 1 goal, 1 assist, only 20 years old. He came through Man City's academy, and he's played the last few games because they have got issues in central central midfield with injuries as well. They've had Lewis Wing, who isn't injured, on loan from Middlesbrough, who everyone kind of thought was going to be a guaranteed nailed-on starter so far this season. He's struggled a little bit, and Darren Moore was in the press relatively recently saying he thinks he's trying a little bit too hard. Dennis Adrian, the guy who scored against us against Portman Road. I've said that wrong. Go on, your face tells me
you
I've got it wrong.
For Sayedele Bashiru really well.
Right.
Adeniran.
The guy that scored against us at Portman Road. He's out with a hamstring injury, and George Byers has been out with an injury as well since the end of November. So they have been hit in the central midfield and the centre-back positions with injuries so far this season.
We'll talk about... Josh Windass we'll talk about in the striking options, but he could possibly drop back into attacking midfield if they wanted to do that. Bannon stats, repeat those again for us.
Yeah, not great, is it? 25 appearances, 3 goals and 4 assists.
Oh, he's quality. Not looking to do him down here, but you'd expect more, wouldn't you? And that possibly tells the story here. If they're pinning all of their hopes on him being the main man, those stats, sadly, they're not going to be enough, are they?
No, for somebody, you know, with the pedigree that he's got and the ability he's got, he's not done great at all. I'm just looking at my notes from the September game to see if I made a note at the time of what his stats were then. But he had 1 goal and 1 assist at the game last time. So only another 2 assists and 3 goals since that September game. So, yeah, not great for somebody who you would sort of pin your hat on as being the talisman to lead you back up to the Championship.
And maybe this is kind of League One summed up now, whereas at the Championship level, Barry Bannon might be getting time. Down here at League One level, he's a big name. This is a big fish in a small pond. And similar, Alan Judge is a great comparison. You know, you do not give Barry Bannon time and space on the ball and expect, you know. So there's a good chance that people are going to be doubling up on him and
clattering him.
He's quite diminutive, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he scored quite a good goal for them, maybe whatever their last home game was. I seem to remember him celebrating. So yeah, scored of late. But yeah, he'll take all the set pieces, all the corners and the free kicks around the penalty area. So we can't dismiss him as a threat. Yeah, he scored against Oxford.
He scored against Oxford in midweek, yeah. Yeah. Put them 1-0 up in the 7th minute. So, yeah, I don't know. Very much like Alan Judge, I kind of think that they thought he'd be the talisman to lead them back. You know, you're looking at those kind of players who are proven at the higher level to drop down and have amazing seasons and play 46 games and, you know, get 10 assists and 10 goals. But like you said, League One tends to chew people up, doesn't it? And all it takes is a side to do their homework, double up on him quickly, get a gnarly central midfielder or a gnarly centre-back to smash him in the first minute, and it could really throw him off his stride. So if we can keep him quiet, that's why Morsy missing is a bit of a blow. You know, you'd love Morsy to be in there up against him, snarling, winding him up. You know, that is going to be a big loss. But hopefully we can keep him quiet.
Was it El Mazzouni who did a number on it in the home game?
He did. He played in the home game. Yeah, El Mazzouni played. He came in and started. And he did really well, didn't he? It was the game where we sort of noticed that El Mazzouni had that bit of physicality. So maybe he might well come in. Yeah, maybe alongside Carroll or Parkinson. Yeah.
Yep. Talk to us about the striker options. We mentioned there might be some rotation here.
Yeah, I think one of the new signings will come in. So Lee Gregory will be one of them. Dropped down from, you know, everyone knows him from Millwall and Stoke in the Championship. He's dropped down to Sheffield Wednesday. 24 appearances, 8 goals and 5 assists, but he's not scored for the last 5 games. So he's a threat, but he's not in great form at the moment. And then recently been playing Sila Sow for the last couple of games, 1 goal this season. But in midweek, I think it was, or the week before, they signed Tyrese John-Jules on loan from Arsenal, who's a striker. So if I was a betting man, I'd imagine he will come in alongside Lee Gregory to make his debut.
I see your Tyrese John-Jules, and I raise you aforementioned Josh Windass, who has made goal-scoring contributions from the bench, replacing Sow in the last 2 matches.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't play Windass somewhere, and as we mentioned, he could sit deeper in a number 10 role if they wanted to do that. There's some other names there, Seb.
Some of the well-known names, Saido Berahino. You know, he joined them just before the September game, but he's not really got going at all. Callum Patterson as well. They're sort of bench options. Berahino didn't get on in midweek against Oxford, so they're very much bench options at the moment. And they've got a guy on loan, Florian Kambari, who's just got back from an injury. I think he had a knee problem. He's closing in on a return. He might be available to be on the squad or on the bench. He certainly won't start, but I think Darren Moore was suggesting he's not too far away from a return, but that could be a John Nolan style close to a return. And that's been a year now, so I don't expect to see him.
There you go. So 3-1-4-2. Expect, I would say, at least 2 new debutants to make their first starts in defence and or attack. Look out for Barry Bannon. And look out for the... I mean, we know about Gregory is a big presence, a kind of a very physical presence up front. Expect crosses from the right-hand side from him. Expect short passing. What can Ipswich Town do about this? Seb, you've mentioned the absence of Morsey, which is an issue, at least the games after this one. And we need to kind of... I'd really shudder. We didn't want to talk about the P word on Wednesday or Tuesday, whenever it was. But this is possibly a really pivotal game for both of these sides if they've got any aspirations of finishing in the top six.
It is, yeah. We probably both need to win, don't we? They need to win to go back ahead of us and keep that cushion with their games in hand. And we need to win to make sure that, you know, if they win their games in hand, they're still going to be behind us. And it was all looking so good, wasn't it, on Tuesday night? Was it a 95th minute winner for Scott Twine for MK Dons? So, you know, this is how it's going to be for the next few weeks. We're going to be 5 points off it at one point, then maybe drop to 7 points off it, etc. So all we can do is keep winning, keep this momentum going. I don't think we'll make too many changes other than the enforced left back change. I mean, would you keep Backinson and Carroll in midfield? Do you think they can do it? Can Carroll play three games in a week, do you think? And if not, is it Elmazuna you're looking to bring in?
I mean, based on what we were talking about before about Barry Bannon, Elmazuna knows how to play him. I'd quite like that, but I do think he'll possibly go for experience. But we made a lot of predictions about the lineup last week and we're totally wrong. Some of them enforced changes, admittedly, but would you revert to more of the lineup?
It'll go back to the Accrington lineup, surely, won't it? Yeah, but that's very harsh on Aluko, who I thought was excellent the other night. So I'm guessing Bond will come back as the main striker. Chaplin or Selena, one of those two will come in for Jackson. And then I guess it's a case of, does the other one come in for Aluko, or does Aluko keep his place? McKenna's come out today, recording this on Thursday, in the pre-match press, hasn't he? And said he'll make a late decision on the left-back position because, you know, Penny apparently isn't too far away. So I guess if he is out, then either we'll see Carl Edwards in a left wing back role, or do you put Burgess into the central three and put Dinassian out left wing back? I don't think Burgess couldn't play the wing back role, could he?
No. I mean, Hayden Colston's name has been mentioned. Stranger things have happened.
It has, but yeah, that would be so out of the blue, wouldn't it? But I guess with the lack of, well, I think it was Dave said on the reaction show, there's no under 23 football, is there? So if he is fit, you're going to have to throw him straight back in. So we'll wait and see. It's really frustrating. It was the only blot on Tuesday night, wasn't it? Was the silliness from Vincent Young. And, you know, I guess he's been in and out the side all season, and now he's going to have to sit out again and give somebody else a chance. So hopefully Penny, maybe against his former side, will be fit to come back in and hopefully, you know, can have a good game. But that's the real area of concern, because Jack Hunt is quite a big threat down there, right? So our left-hand position needs to be decent.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to maybe risk Edwards.
No,
he said Caden Jackson at left wing, but you never know. Because Kenneth McKenna's come out and said that he's got a part to play. Are we expecting him to leave? Yeah, lots of interesting quotes on Thursday. So we shall see. But I think all of us are hoping that Penny will be fit against his former club, won't we? And the popular prediction, maybe out of hope rather than expectation on the midweek show, was a draw, Seb. What say you?
I think a 1-1 is the most likely here. My heart is a 1-0 win and keep the momentum going. You know, they're not in the best runs of form, but Hillsborough is a tough place to go, and they're going to be buoyed by these new signings, aren't they? It's going to be a big crowd. So a 1-1 draw, I think, will be the most likely outcome.
Okie dokie. We shall see.
What do you think?
I went for the 1-1. I'm just in my brain trying to figure out whether that is that's what I want or whether what I expect to happen. But I think I would take it. I think we kind of did the old Mick McCarthy job.
Mick McCarthy, yeah. Give me a point, I won't get on the bus.
Do you remember our last win away at Sheffield Wednesday? I'm trying to look back on the stats here.
No, we lost 3-2 under Hurst, didn't we, when Toto got sent off?
Oh, Waghorn double.
One was a free kick, wasn't it? Yeah, one was a free kick, I think, yeah.
There you go. So we've got form of late, but yeah, Sheffield Wednesday in good form at home. You'll hear all about what has happened at Hillsborough on Monday morning, if you haven't already heard about it, but you'll at least hear it with some more detail and some, hopefully, some useful insights and different perspectives. And obviously, we'll chip in with any of your thoughts and questions as well via our usual Twitter questions. Shout out at full time on the flagship this week. Ben, I think back in the host chair, I think with Dave, and Craig may have made himself unavailable. So we will have some rotation as well. Might be one of Seb or I, you never know. As always, all the details of where to listen, where to watch, how to donate if you would like to do that, and where to follow is available at Blue Monday, itfc.co.uk. Blue Monday, itfc.co.uk. I only gave a Twitter address then. Don't want to do that. So there you go. There's all the details. And as always, we need to thank our good mates at the Greyhound as well. Excellent crowd there last weekend for the Accrington game. We hope for similar next week against Gillingham.
Yep. Gillingham
and fifth. Thank you. And but as always, if you are looking for a place to go for a quick pint or a nice leisurely lunch, we can always recommend the Greyhound, can't we, Seb?
Yeah. What was the? I saw the menu tease on Twitter on the day of the match. What was the McKenna meal? What is it?
So there were two bits on the menu. There is I haven't got the names right. There is a Morsey burger,
okay,
which has got everything in it. It's crazy. I think it's got hash browns and stuff in it. I think it's like the Big Mick, maybe rebranded. Don't want to put the Greyhound down. And then the McKenna, I can't say it. It's McKenna and cheese, like mac and cheese.
Like mac and cheese, okay.
And it comes with pulled pork.
Okay, yeah, I saw the menu tease, and that does sound good. I'm there on the before the Gillingham games. So that might well be my choice.
And you can have a Danassian dog, which is basically a chili dog.
Okay.
There you go. Greyhound, get down there. And you may or may not see members of the Blue Monday team. Let's go into our brand new feature set. There you go. I love a bit of Aqua. That's much more chilled out type of vibe than the old Ripple Room 101.
I'm starting to miss the 101 vibe, though.
Just play it. I did have a few 101 thoughts come to my head.
Actually. Yeah, I did as well. I had the same thing. I was going to do the when teams cut loans short halfway through the season.
Okay.
That's really annoying. You know, you can take them on a season-long loan, expect them to be here all year. I think Joe was talking about it, wasn't he, on the flagship? And then you've got to spend time negotiating the deal that should be done because the fashionable thing is to recall and send out again. So
I was going to do people coming out and apologising but not apologising. AKA Andy Holt and his
politician's apology.
Sorry if I offended you. It's not an apology. If you did something wrong, say sorry for what you did wrong. That's an apology. I hope put tweet at Ipswich if I would have got your votes because I'm doing.
You'd have won that. You'd have won that one because it's topical. Everyone hates Andy Holt. Well, so that'd have been a guaranteed banker for you.
If it had just been me versus me, and frankly, this is the only way I'm going to win these days because Seb obviously wins the popularity vote. It's disgusting. My other one would have been this John Terry-led non-fungible tokens thing that he's doing with footballers with little chimp logos or something like that. Got no time for that. And this cryptocurrency bollocks that football clubs are starting to get involved in as well. Nonsense. A load of people lost big money, I think, in the last few weeks on that. So that would have been up there. But yeah, Andy Holt's sorry, not sorry would have probably been mine. But anyway.
That would have been a guaranteed home win. So it will come back. It will return. Obviously, now we haven't got to spend a week thinking about it. Naturally, things are starting to come to us. So we will bring it back and we'll start making lists of stuff.
We're good once the pressure's off, eh?
Yeah.
Worth mentioning, then, as I alluded to there, that everyone loves Seb on the Twitter poll. I mean, 14.2%.
To be fair, you did slag them all off. You blamed them all, and you said it was their fault and stuff.
It was affectionate. I didn't slag anyone off, did I? Yeah, I probably did. Yeah, in which case, I'm sorry if I offended you, Twitter.
Oh, sorry.
So there we go. Seb, top of the Blue Monday sliding door moments league. We were doing early burly last week. That's a 14.2% victory there, Seb. That is junky.
Massive.
For the injuries to Jono and Scoey in the 98-99 season against my Scoey hitting the post against Millwall 95-96. I've removed points per game because it's a nonsense metric, and we will stick with, I think, what I quite like the percentage difference being the differentiator.
Craig, feel free to reply
in the comments. So early burly last week, late burly. Is that what I need to find a rhyming couplet?
Yeah.
Later burly era. You've got some ground rules for this week, Seb.
Yeah, I should explain. So obviously every man and his dog is going to say that the ultimate sliding doors moment for Burnley is the summer transfer window of 2001. We heard it on the interview with Craig, which is still available, a superb couple of interviews based on his playing career and his managerial career. But it sounds like we were going after Mark Poom as the number one choice to replace Richard Wright. He was injured. We go and get the Italian goalkeeper, as he was affectionately referred to. So that is an absolute give me. So we've decided between us that we won't be picking the summer transfer window because it would be an absolute home win, wouldn't it? So we're going for
Richard Wright's departure and Scully's departure. I think we've
it's far too easy. You know, Finidi George comes in, that's not maybe, you know, he did all right numbers wise but if Poom comes in instead of Serena, we probably don't get Andy Marshall, and you know, everything hopefully might have been all right. So we're going to skip that one. That would have been a guaranteed winner for somebody, so I'm not that generous to let him try and get some points back on the board. So we're going to move past the summer transfer window, and you're going to focus on the relegation season, and I'm focusing on the first division back in the Championship, or Division One as it was called then. So I'll let you go first with yours.
We're doing chronological order, shall we? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to drill into, let me get the exact date here so we can be precise. I know how people like things to be precise. The 2nd of March, 2002, Ipswich Town 1, Southampton 3. We had just been battered by Liverpool, which was not a surprise. The team in that era was just ridiculous. I think they had three up front, Anelka, Heskey and Owen or something like that. So we didn't really stand a chance, particularly with Andy Marshall in goal. But at the time going into this match, Southampton before this game were 13th, 1 point ahead of us. We were in 15th. And this defeat just took just the stuffing out of us. We'd got ourselves back into kind of lower mid-table after an amazing Christmas run of 7 wins in 8, that blooming Charlton defeat where we took the lead twice in the first few minutes. But this Southampton defeat, just particularly given the opposition, and I mentioned they're not great, any great shakes, but the abiding memory for me, and I've got an image of it here, is 33-year-old Chris Marsden there waltzing through our defence.
Lionel Messi-esque, yeah.
I mean, look, Seb, I may be damning myself here. It looks like me. If I'd put a Southampton shirt on, shaved the beard and took the glasses off, I've scored against Ipswich in the Premier League. Our defence just collapsed. And from that point onwards, we managed one victory. We had 30 points. We just needed to get to the magic. Well, what was the margin we needed? We needed to get to 40 points and one less goal difference than we ended up with. To stay up at the expense of Sunderland. Actually, 4 points, apologies. So we only needed to, a win and a draw, or maybe a win and a win. And instead, we lost 7 and we drew 3 of them. We only beat Borough. And that, to me, set us on a trajectory for permanent negativity ever since. So there you go.
I think, didn't we also have a, wasn't there a break between the Liverpool game and there's an international break, isn't there? And didn't we go away to a warm weather training camp, right? I think. And I seem to remember all the quotes in the press saying, let's get the Liverpool monkey off our backs and we're looking forward to getting back and putting things right. And yeah, it just absolutely killed us, didn't it? It killed
just less than
the
a
players.
Month, Seb, gap.
It killed us. It killed us as fans. And yeah, great shout, to be fair.
But you're looking, I'm looking in there at these. I mean, West Ham away was a pretty chastening day. The Bolton defeat, obviously, we know about there. Yeah, the Man United defeat.
But then we're unlucky. We draw 0-0 at home to Chelsea, and Marcus Bent misses a penalty, I think. You know, there's a couple of games where we could have, it was in our hands, so to speak. But yeah, then it just went, didn't it?
Yeah, so there you go, Southampton. Let me just put up Chris Marsden's face there. Just think of that when you're voting on Twitter.
Just look at his face.
Look at his face. Cool.
Right, I'm going to go for a couple of months later after that. So I'm going to go for the fact that qualifying for the UEFA Cup, as it was at the time, via the Fair Play League, which, by the way, is rubbish, cost Burley his job and cost us coming back up. You know, we had the great season the year before where we, you know, Inter Milan, Helsingborg and Torpedo Moscow. We qualify via the Fair Play League when we get relegated. We play Avenir Beggin. We scrape a 1-0 victory over there and we come back and absolutely batter them 8-1. However, straight after that, we struggle to a 0-0 draw against Preston. We then play FC Sarted at the third week of September. Straight away after that, we go up to Stoke and lose 2-1. We then play SC Sarted in the return leg. Okay, after that, we do beat Wimbledon 1-0 with a 90th minute Darren Ambrose goal. But the game after that is the Burley 3-0 Grimsby time for a change match. And then we play Slovan Liberec. We play them and we lose to Palace straight away afterwards in Joe Raw's game, first game at Portman Road. So it absolutely killed us. We couldn't cope with it. We didn't have the squad to cope with it. You could argue it really hurt us the year before, but at least we got some good away days and some big names. You know, we played Avenir Beggin, FC Sarted and Slovan Liberec. And, you know, none of these really, really jumped out. You're pointing, that's the Inter Milan picture, isn't it, of Alan Armstrong? Yeah. None of those teams stand out, and it killed us. And that season, we finished 4 points off the playoffs. And, you know, if we scrape a win at Preston and we get a point against Stoke, etc., we're there. And it just absolutely killed us. The squad couldn't cope with it. It was a totally unnecessary thing. I wish we could have opted out of it. And I think it cost Burley his job, and I think it cost us promotion. And, you know, if we'd have gone straight back up, we keep the likes of Ambrose, Darren Bent in the Premier League, Herman Hrdlicka and Matt Holland stage, you know, we're going back up at it with a stronger squad arguably than we came up with 2 years previously. But we don't, we miss out, we finish seventh, and from there, you know, administration comes and it all starts to fall apart. So for me, that moment there cost Burley his job and cost us our return to the Premier League.
I mean, there are some strong offerings there. You just think back on that era, if you're of the right age, how do we screw that up so badly?
So badly.
That team in the Premier League era it was too good. You know, it's a cliche, isn't it? Too good to go down. It just totally. I mean, the European ties obviously didn't help us either. I'm trying to, you know, Torpedo Moscow and then drawing with Blackburn and, you know, that kind
Helsingborg
of stuff.
Helsingborg and losing to drawing with Fulham, I think, was it after the Helsingborg game? And Inter Milan drawing against Middlesbrough. Yeah, the same pattern happened. We could never deal, could we, with playing on a Thursday and then playing on a Sunday. We could never deal with it.
Well, you look at the last Inter Milan game was the 6th of December. And then a few weeks after that, we lost at Newcastle, then away at Villa. And then that run begins. I don't think it's any coincidence.
And I've got a similar thing. Yeah, after we go out against Slovan Liberec, we only lose 3 out of the next 13 games. We go on a little bit of a run of form. We lose to Forest, and there's a couple of the big boys in there who ultimately finish in the playoffs. No. Yeah, Johnson 2-1.
We were there.
We were. But then we got on a decent run of form over Christmas and we start to make headway up the table. And it just proves we couldn't deal with it. And for me, that's my sliding doors effort this week.
Good stuff. Well, as always, the Twitter poll will appear partway through Friday morning when I wake up. We'll put the tweet out for the show first and then we'll catch up and then you can vote on that. And we'll be interested to see how that one pans out, and we'll reveal the results next week. And for one more time, let's listen to Aqua. That's your lot. Thank you. If you've made it this far, thank you for listening. Thank you, Seb, for your research and your insight. Thank you to Paul Westlake for preparing our flashback clip earlier on. As a reminder, head off to bluemondayitfc.co.uk for all the details and bits and pieces there. Tune into the flagship show Monday morning with Ben and two others. We'll see who they are. I think Dave and one other talking about Sheffield Wednesday. And once more, thank you to our good friends at the Greyhound, the best pub in Ipswich, in my humble opinion. So going ahead down to the Greyhound for your pre-match fix. Seb, as always, I will leave the last word for you.
Well, we have some breaking news as we're live on air. We've just made a signing. So we were discussing, obviously, signings earlier in the pod and wondering what we were going to do with the left-hand side on Saturday. We've just signed the Brentford left-back, Dominic Thompson, who is a left-back or a left full-back on loan for the remainder of the season.
Brilliant.
So breaking news, that's just come in. It's been confirmed by Andy Warren at the EATD. So that's just come in. So there you go. That's the left-back situation sorted. So I presume he'll make his debut against Hillsborough. And safe travels to everyone going... against Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough
United.
Safe travels to everybody going up there. Let's hope to keep the momentum going. And come on, you Blues.
It's It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.